There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, I'm still trying to wrap my mind around that Westwood One news update. The way I remember it best is, I guess it was cases of diseases people had had in the past came back while they were in space. But maybe they weren't new cases. But my worry is, are there... Because, you know, you can put space in front of anything and then becomes space herpes. Are there space herpes? Are they saying that? This is another reason to be satisfied in the fact that I'll never get called up. Never get called up for Space Force service. I'll never be able to afford the money that billionaires can to go up into space for a little bit. Because the nice thing is, will be no issue with space herpes. I do think, in all clarity, in truth, I think they're talking about cases people had that come back in space. But then, aren't they spreading what then would be, I think, could qualify as space herpes around any space station? Question. It's a brave new world. Constantly new questions out there as we forge a way forward. All right, Monday edition of Midday Mobile, live local talk over the next couple of hours. You and I, glad you're here. Coming up in hour number two, Congressman Bradley Byrne joins us. VA facility opening here today, outpatient facility. He'll talk to us more about that. And also our leadoff batter in Montgomery, our buddy Todd Stacey from the Alabama Daily News. Hey, Todd.
Hey, Sean. You know, I really can't wait for the really awkward space herpes ads, you know, from the pharmaceutical companies. They always have these ads for, like, STDs. They're so awkward. You hate it for those actors.
Yes, you hate it for my family watching it together when the children are...
Oh, it's terrible. So the next step is, you know, do you have these symptoms? Have you been to space?
If you've been to space and you exhibit these systems, you need to talk to your doctor about the new space herpes serum. Yeah. Holy cow.
Gotta get checked before you go to space. Everybody knows that.
Now, the side effects are like gravity and a bunch of other things, but yeah, we're going to fix your space herpes as we go forward. Okay. It's too much. That opens up a whole new... I have to jot some notes down here. I got to work up on some parody ads going forward. But let's talk about what happens tomorrow. Of course, Todd Stacey, Alabama Daily News, aldailynews.com. If you've been like so many of us and have signed up for the email, you got a little heads up in your email this morning that they're back to work tomorrow in Montgomery, right?
That's right. Yeah, tomorrow, Tuesday the 19th, it is actually day two of the regular session. You know, they had the special session. Governor Kay Abbey called the special session, and they basically delayed the regular one. And, you know, not to get too far into the weeds about how all that works, but the legislature has 105 days to meet for the 30 meeting days that it has. So they have a little wiggle room. That's why they generally meet, you know, 2 days this week, 3 days next week, that kind of thing. And so they have some like I said, some wiggle room. That's why they did the special session and basically just pushed pause on the regular. So now the regular resumes again, and it's day two starting tomorrow. And look, there's no shortage of issues on the table. You've got the budgets. Normally, at the very beginning of a session, the budgets are all the rage. People want to know where the money's going. So actually, that's going to be a really big deal tomorrow as Governor Ivey releases her budget. So that's, of course, the education budget, the bigger one. That's about $7.1 billion. She's going to be looking for a teacher pay raise of about 4%. They'll argue over that level, you know, back and forth. She's also asking for another increase to the state's pre-K system. you know, first class pre-K. It's a great number one system in the country, but they want to give more kids access to it.
Hey, stop on that, because I don't think a lot of people know that. I mean, and you and I have talked about it before, I think, in the past, but national rankings say that the pre-K program in Alabama is the number one, the best.
That's right. It's called First Class Pre-K. It actually started a long time ago, back when I worked in Governor Riley's office. And look, it was quality back then. It has been number one this entire time because they've kept their quality standards so high. I mean, it's crazy to think that states like Massachusetts and Iowa and others who have great education systems are modeling their pre-K system off of ours.
So what happens, though? I mean, people are going to hear that. And I know we're going to get back to the list here, but people are going to hear that and say, we have this number one, top-ranked in the nation pre-K program, and then, but going forward after that, we fall behind compared to other states.
That's right, and especially over the last 8 years or so, you had a lot of incredible gains in the 2000s, even in the late 90s, to where Alabama was ranked, you know, 38th, 37th in education, which, hey, to us around here, that's not too bad. But
right.
Yes, the last 8 years, you've had a lot of declines. The biggest problem with our pre-K system is it doesn't reach everybody. And so while it has been number one for quality, not everybody has access to it. So when you hear about $25 million increases, what that's going to is creating more classrooms, getting more kids access to this great program. Now, I think they've been smart as they've gone along not to drop off in quality. You know, you can't just, you know, spread your money thin and have the quality go down. They have the top quality in the country, but they want more kids and more kids every year to be able to take advantage of it. They've got right now, about a third of four-year-olds across Alabama can take first-class pre-K,
okay,
and no charge. But that number obviously needs to go up. And so they've got a goal of about half, I think, within 2 or 3 years. And that'd be really big for the state.
All right. So that is one of the items that we're going to hear about tomorrow from Governor Ivey. But then a couple of others here that I think are going to start a lot of talk. Well, heck, it's been going on. First one, let's go to low-hanging fruit and talk prisons here. And what's going to happen, man? Tell me, is it going to be put in the legislature's hand, or is the governor really going to do this executive move and get a private contractor and all that?
Yeah, so right now they have asked for a bid for proposals, request for proposals. They've asked companies, to, you know, wherever you are, whether it's Alabama or elsewhere, to submit proposals to the state for what it would take to build these prisons and how much and all that kind of stuff. So you're looking at probably another 2 or 3 weeks before they have accepted these proposals, reviewed them, and actually try to choose one. And the process for that will be the governor, through the Department of Corrections and who all, you know, are involved, lawyers and people like that, they're involved, will basically submit a contract, sign a contract with a firm, with one of these. You may have like a development firm and a construction firm, or however it is, to go forward in building that prison plan. The way it works with contracts in our state, the legislature can delay them, but they cannot disprove them. So they could delay it for, I think, 90 days, but they can't cancel it out. So again, the way the governor proposes to fund this the construction of new prisons is through savings over time. So they're not floating a bond issue. They're not raising taxes to pay for it. They say that once constructed, they'll save so much from delayed maintenance or deferred maintenance and overtime costs and all these costs that have piled up over time that those cost savings will go to pay for this plan. And, you know, that's wishful thinking, but when I was sitting in the proposal and hearing all this from the Department of Corrections and the governor, I mean, it kind of made sense. I don't know if they'll get every cent to pay for it because, you know, construction costs and all that, they always tend to go up, but at least the plan is for the savings to pay for these new prisons. As far as the legislature goes, Sean, they're not out of the woods because that plan wouldn't even be in place until 2021. So in the meantime, we've got to deal with our current prisons, and so they're going to be looking at plus ups to the Department of Corrections budget to hire more personnel. They need more prison guards, and it's a awful, you know, very challenging job, especially these days because it's a very violent place to work. They're going to try to do more to fix the security problems we do have at these prisons. Some of these places are 40, 50 years old, and they're not designed for, you know, the modern world, and especially not designed for the thousands of prisoners that are located there. So they need every cent they can get to try to fix what they have. And remember, we're trying to avoid, like, at this very moment, the state is trying to avoid a federal takeover of prisons. So the part of that is the legislature demonstrating to the court that, hey, we're trying to direct more funding toward our prisons.
All right. If we come back from the break, I want to talk more about that, too, because there's a little bit of a wrinkle that is somewhat counterintuitive until you get the facts that actually a building, at least I've been told, we'll see if it bears out, that building a new prison reduces the cost. I mean, because most people hear that and they go, what? You know, so when we come back, I want to talk more about that. Our guest, Todd Stacey, Alabama Daily News, aldailynews.com. They go back to work tomorrow for regular session day two, because all that, use a technical term, all that poppycock that we had going on before, that was special session. Now back to regular session. You feeling me? You got it? Okay. Coming right back. More of Midday Mobile on FM Talk 106.5.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
1220, FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. On the text line, lots of suggested space medicines for space disorders, space things that could happen to you in space. I appreciate that. Also, on the text line, and now it's moved over to my Twitter feed, at FM Talk 106.5, what started this morning when somebody said, quit saying Beto O'Rourke and say Robert O'Rourke or Robert Francis, which is, there's some Robert Francis's in my family. Imagine that. Actually, a lot of Francis's, not so many Roberts. Imagine that. Last name Sullivan. And somebody said, well, you know, you're just playing into the game of the identity politics. So I wanted to make it even more interesting and give y'all the opportunity to give me the best identity politic name available. You get three. You get the first, the middle, the last name, and for the kicker, you get the nickname. And I bet you this spreads far and wide now that it's on Twitter. But you get to create this name, first, middle, last, and nickname kicker, to give me the best ever, the greatest of all time, politically charged identity politic name. You can hit us up on the text line, 343-0106, or on my Twitter feed now, where it's now bled over there, at FM Talk 106.5. All right, continue our conversation with Todd Stacey from the Alabama Daily News. Website is aldailynews.com, and if people have not listened to, if they've not been moved by our urging in the past to go get signed up, tell folks how they could do it today.
It's really easy. Like you said, it's aldailynews.com. That's the homepage. Go right up to the top. You'll see a button saying subscribe. Just click that. Enter your name and your email. It's all free. No charge at all. Just enter your name and your email, and you'll be on the list. Every morning I send out the News Digest. That's a rundown of the top five stories of the day, plus headlines from all around the state, news briefs of what's going on, and the front pages. I like looking at the front pages from all around the state just to kind of see what people are reading in different places, even though you can't get those papers. So, yeah, aldailynews.com. We'd be glad to have you as a subscriber.
All right. You would have read today what we're talking about right now with regular sessions starting tomorrow and the budgets being rolled out. And you pointed out in a normal year where you didn't go right into a special, this would have happened last week or the week before.
That's right. So you've delayed the, you know, the governor is supposed to release her budgets on the second day of the session. So because that second day never happened, you know, because they delayed it, now tomorrow is the second day. So that's a clever move on her part because, you know, had the budgets already been out there, that would have probably complicated the gas tax debate. Somebody could have, you know, grabbed one line item in the budget and kind of held it hostage or rather held the gas tax hostage for this one line item they care about. So it was kind of clever on her part to hold the budgets until the special session was over. So yeah, now we get started tomorrow. And by the way, I have to say, I think we talked about this before, you know, as much credit should go to Kay Ivey for being very apt negotiator here. Let's not forget who her chief of staff is.
Yeah,
you know, Joe Bonner, former Congressman Joe Bonner is her chief of staff. He is no stranger to negotiation and, you know, horse trading. I mean, he learned all that in Congress, being on the Appropriations Committee. So you may have seen a little bit of that in the success of the special session.
All right. So the prison issue, we'll wait to see when the paint dries on that. And the other one, the state Medicaid system. Where are we going on that?
Well, the good news is all the projections show that the state can fully fund its Medicaid system this year. I mean, that's a sentence that has not been uttered for many years. There's usually always some kind of hole to fill, and we're looking for, you know, oil spill money or hurricane money or some kind of other pot, you know, of federal money to fill the Medicaid budget. That's yep. not the case this year. They've got all the funding they need. Now, that doesn't mean that the future budgets are going to be good, but at least for this year, Medicaid seems happy. The talk about Medicaid is whether or not the state will pursue expansion. Mary Sell, you know, who writes for Alabama Daily News, she did a big long story on this just to get everybody's reaction. And the takeaway was, you know, there's more conversation about that. Republicans aren't just completely opposed to the idea of Medicaid expansion because there are some economic benefits. But they've been very clear. They say, look, the money's just not there. The state just doesn't have the money to foot the bill for that kind of Medicaid expansion. And until we have more money, until there's some other pot of money to pull it from, it's a non-starter. And I encourage people to go read that because there's a lot of folks out there really pushing for Medicaid expansion, but you really got to go and read where the lawmakers say, show me the money. Show me exactly how this pays for itself. Otherwise, we're going to be right back where we started, you know, trying to cough up money we don't have.
All right. Speaking of money, let's talk about the other side of the till here. Instead of money out, money in, and everybody's favorite discussion, a lottery plan. Here we go. Give people some facts. What are we talking about here?
Well, so interestingly, I was talking to Senator Jim McClendon the other day. I think we talked about this a little bit. And I was asking him about the gas tax because the Senate was voting on the gas tax. The bell had just gone off. They're voting. And I was asking him how he was going to vote. He ended up being a no. And he said, hey, I don't want to talk about that. I'm dropping a lottery bill next week. I said, whoa, man, that's news. Okay. So, yes, this week, in fact, tomorrow, Senator Jim McClendon is going to file his lottery bill. And so we don't know every detail yet, but what we do know is that the proceeds of his lottery plan are going to be split down the middle, 50-50, between the general fund and the education trust fund. And that's interesting. And we've talked about this a lot mm-hmm. on the program, Sean, about how the education funding is at a record level. And with that being the case, why would you, if you really want to solve the state's problems, why would you funnel all the money to education? So I think this plan is an acknowledgement of that reality. So he has he's split it down the middle, education, general fund. Now, there are no details beyond that. And I think he's going to be careful to avoid earmarking beyond that. Of course, earmarking is how we get in trouble anyway, when you don't give the legislature any flexibility to, see where the needs are year to year. So I think it's going to be very interesting to see how lawmakers react to this 50-50 split. It's easy to be for a lottery. Just over the last 10, 20 years, you've seen that trend line go up, especially among Republicans who are just like, all right, it's kind of an economic reality at this point. We have no problem with the lottery, but how that lottery money is spent can be very controversial. So, education groups who, every time there was a lottery proposal, got 100% of that pie, now only get 50%. I bet they're going to have something to say about that. So, yeah, he'll introduce it tomorrow, and then all the fireworks go off.
Yeah, that's what's going to get interesting is when, everybody talks about the carve-outs. Yeah, I would argue that, like you said, where the ETF is, behind its wall there in funding, doing all right, the 50% of the lottery funds, whatever they will be, that would go to education, they are there as a face for this bill. They are there as a hood ornament. They are there to open the way for people to say yes, because somehow people are hung up and if it's going to be a lottery, it's got to be for the kids. If we do it for the kids, it's okay. It's for the children, man.
It's for the kids, Sean.
Yeah.
For the classroom.
That's right.
Right, yeah. The lottery for prisons is not a good slogan.
You know, that was my idea, right? I thought it was beautiful.
Let's pass a lottery for Medicaid and prisons.
Yeah.
Now, actually, to me, that makes a ton of policy sense, but you can't sell that.
It's true.
So here comes the lottery debate. There are going to be a lot of interests, different interests from around the state that are going to have something to say about this bill, but this is coming from a Republican. This is not some kind of, this is not the old days. So I think just that alone is pretty interesting.
Well, okay. I mean, the whole suite of bills that came from the Republicans, let's point out, and it could come from nowhere else, I guess, with super control in the House and Senate, and obviously control of the Blunt Mansion. But the gas tax, Republican bill. Lottery, Republican bill. If we move on a private sector prison design and deal, that comes from a Republican as well. I mean, all these things are coming from Republicans.
Well, sure. I mean, that's who governs the state. I mean, it's not just a supermajority. It's a super majority.
So super.
But I think it's a recognition of just how you have to govern. It's not, nobody wants a gas tax, but for the last, I guess, 5 years, they've seen the proceeds going down and the state's roads deteriorating, say, okay, we got to do something about this. Same thing with a lottery. I mean, the polling on that has changed quite a bit. It's like you said, like, we're surrounded by lotteries now. It's not the same, you know, fight that it was back in 1999. So I'm really not too surprised to see it. It's gonna come from Republicans now. How voters react to that, I don't know. But I'll tell you this. I mean, just because you've got an R by your name doesn't mean that the state's problems don't exist for you. And that, you know.
Yeah, but look what happened to your old boss. You know, when he mentioned it. You know, the tax increase. You know.
Yeah, he proposed Amendment 1.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. I mean, look, it was failed
poison
at the polls.
Back then. Yeah.
It failed at the polls 2-1. What it did was pave the way to allow them to cut, you know, 25% of state government, which is what they had to do because there was no funding. But he also got elected, reelected, beat Roy Moore 2-1 in that election in 2006. So it wasn't political poison to him. You get into office, you realize the budget, the one budget line is going this way and the revenue line is going this way. You know, you got to make choices. That's what you're seeing.
Heartbreak here. Come right back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 12:34 FM Talk 106.5, and it is Midday Mobile on this Monday. Getting to talk to our buddy Todd Stacey, Alabama Daily News, aldailynews.com. Y'all got to sign up for his email each day. You need it year-round, but during the days of special, regular, in-between session in Montgomery, you got to keep up with it. We're talking about something, Todd, before we went to the break, and I want, because we haven't talked about this in a while, your history in politics. Now, you've worked in Montgomery, you've worked in Washington, but the Montgomery part is what? You were press secretary, correct?
Right, for Governor Riley in his second term.
Okay, so as his press secretary, you were privy to, you know, what the thoughts, getting the thoughts of the governor out, and former Governor Riley took it. He did. I mean, I know you said he won, and he won against Roy Moore. I'm not going to take a low-hanging fruit and pick it there, but you know that he did take a lot of political grief for a move on Amendment 1 for raising taxes. I mean, it was. I remember back then it was a third rail, and he touched it, and he got shocked.
Oh, no question. I mean, it was after he got elected. It was 2003. Proposed basically a restructuring of the tax code to where, you know, right now most of it is based on it's different things, but income tax, sales tax, and as you were saying before, the growth taxes are all in the education trust fund, and basically it would have raised property taxes quite a bit, but restructured some of that so that maybe we could have gotten some of these things that other states have, like college scholarships if you make A's and B's and things like that. But it was ultimately rejected 2-1 at the polls. So, you know, wasn't a popular idea. I don't think raising taxes is ever a popular idea. However, if we could take the time machine back and reevaluate some of that stuff, maybe go about it piecemeal instead of all at once, we probably would be a lot better off, because the tax structure in the state really is kind of screwed up. Maybe it wasn't a good idea to go about it all at once. Maybe certain portions of it should have been pursued first. But what Amendment one did do was, once the voters had spoken, it allowed Governor Riley and the legislature to just cut 25% from state government. They really had no other choice. And so I think voters did approve of that, waste cutting, really tightening the belt of state government. And plus, he eventually proposed a tax cut, the first tax cut, I think, in a generation in Alabama. And things like that led to his reelection.
All right. So, but with those of, I mean, if you could go, if I could meet you back there in the press secretary's office, I show up in the old DeLorean time machine and I say, hey, listen, this is going to be, while it's not going to be like Amendment 1, there's going to be an increase in taxes pushed by Republicans in a special session with a former, the future governor, Kay Ivey. What would you have thought of me telling you that then? Would you have said, crazy man, get out of my office?
Well, back then, gas tax receipts are pretty good, and so I may not have had the same opinion, but if you had told me that the reality was the roads are deteriorating this much, our buying power on gas tax revenues are this much, and just the state of it, I really couldn't have argued with you, because, I mean, the case that Governor Ivey laid out, I couldn't argue with much of it. I don't want to pay more gas tax. And I know nobody else does, but I certainly want my roads to be better. So, yeah, but as we were talking about, the Amendment 1 that Governor Riley proposed and the lottery that Governor Siegelman proposed just 4 years earlier, they were defeated at the polls largely for the same reason. They were defeated because no matter if you agreed or disagreed with the consequences of the policy, the upshot of the policy, voters, by and large, did not trust the legislature, just basically didn't trust Montgomery to fairly allocate those dollars because of the corruption that has existed for decades, because of just some of this, you know, waste. I mean, how many Department of Transportation directors went to jail back in the 70s and 80s, yeah, and even the 90s? So you just had a lot of distrust built up. They didn't trust Siegelman on the lottery. They didn't trust Governor Riley on Amendment 1. Property tax reshuffling, and so that's what happened. The whole idea was to get back to trust in government, but look, you've always got, every couple of years you're going to have a scandal or two pop up, and so will that trust ever exist? I don't know. I think a healthy distrust of government is good.
Yeah,
that doesn't mean the government can do nothing. And it, you know, if you're, whether you're hoping for a bridge down there on I-10 or port improvements down there, you know, Mobile Bay, or if they're hoping for a interstate connection up there in Huntsville, that all costs money. And it's easy to say do nothing, but when you do nothing, you get nothing.
Yeah, and that's the rub. What do you do? Because I hear it every day, and I get it. I get it where my listeners come from, this deep-seated mistrust. Heck, that's why we have 93% earmarking in the budget, this deep-seated mistrust for Montgomery. But then I say, then you have to do something different. We might need to put different people in till you feel like you got enough of people that are going to do right there. Because if every move that's made, it doesn't mean you don't have oversight and scrutiny. I'm for it. But if everything is nefarious, if no matter what move is made, and then somebody says, well, what you don't know is there's a secret cabal of people doing this, that, and the other. You know, I've always said, give me the information, let's bust them. I never seem to get the information. But if everything, then you need to put somebody else in there. I mean, if you can't trust any move they make. Now, don't be naive, don't be a Pollyanna, but at some point you have to trust that they're doing the people's business.
Well, some of my best friends are conspiracy theorists, and I love it because it always leads to the same place. Well, what's your plan? What's your idea? If you really think that everything is something, you know, the game is out to get you, the fix is in, then why even care? Why even vote? The truth is, it's not like that. Sure, there are some shady politicians out there, mm-hmm. and what gives me more comfort than anything else is that things don't stay secret. Things come out, and people are exposed. People are accused and tried and convicted, and that's what gives me comfort to know that no politician is smart enough to keep it all hidden. But look, Ben Franklin that said, you know, the taxes are the price we pay for civilized society. It's just true, and I don't care how conservative you are. I mean, if you want to drive on roads, that costs money. And we can go back to buying chickens and gold and all, depending on our land, if we want to. But our society depends on, you know, a realistic, modern government. And we're, even after this gas tax is implemented, Alabama is still by far the lowest tax state in the union. You know, that's probably, we like that. There are there's a reason why Alabama is a low tax, low service state. The question is, how low can you go and still survive and still attract industry and actually, you know, have people remain here for future generations? I think we reached that point, and you saw Republican politicians say, all right, we've got to do something about it. And a 10-cent increase over 3 years is basically half of what the research showed was needed. So I don't know. I don't think it's all that big a deal.
You wonder if it would be a time, though, for those like me that would like to see some massive un-earmarking in the general fund budget to say, you know, if somebody could run the statistics or run the numbers, do an audit that shows if we un-earmark the money and could move the money from here to there and, you know, shave a little bit here, increase this budget over there, you know, overall, that there would be, you know, money to fund these infrastructure improvements or at some level between 0% and 100% of the
That's
cost.
That's what Amendment 1 did.
Yeah. Well, but guess what? I mean,
well, I tell you what's the big, you know, the biggest earmark in the budget of all is road and bridge.
Yeah.
And people want
And then
that.
Prisons, right? And then Medicaid.
Well, sure. Well, yeah, Medicaid is a big one. But I'm just saying the biggest earmark at all is that road and that gas tax money goes to roads and bridges. So, yes, I agree. The legislature needs more flexibility. But, one of the biggest complaints about the gas tax increase was saying, hey, we don't want this money going anywhere else. Well, that's an earmark. So it's kind of hard to have it both ways. We want earmarks when we like it going toward the stuff that we like, but we hate earmarks when it's going towards stuff that we don't like. And so, and everybody likes different things. So I agree that legislature needs more flexibility, but that's the reason why you haven't seen that is because, again, everybody's happy with different earmarks.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's, sorry, I don't have any really answers for you, but almost every attempt to unearmark funds has been defeated because somebody likes that pot of money and you're going to, you know, ruffle their feathers. I wish it wasn't that way, but it is.
Oh, it's a whole pasture full of sacred cows. Trust me. I see it every day.
That's right.
All right. Remind folks, once again, aldailynews.com. What do they got to do when they get there to get signed up?
It's real easy. Aldailynews.com. At the top, click subscribe, and that just takes you to a page where you enter your name and your email. Sign up, and you'll get my daily news about 8 o'clock every morning. And tell me what you think. All you got to do is reply and let me know what you think about the news. And Sean, you said you're having Congressman Byrne on. Tell
yes.
him congratulations. I spent a lot of time working with the VA trying to get things better. Any kind of improvement is something to celebrate. And if you got a new clinic opening, that means people are going to get care and help for mental health problems. That's a big success. Tell him I said congratulations.
I'll do it, man. Yeah, I think it's a great thing for our community, and we're proud of it. Todd, we'll talk soon, man.
Okay, thanks a lot.
There is Todd Stacey, Alabama Daily News, aldailynews.com, a font of information. And yeah, if you're going to make it through session knowing what they're doing in Montgomery, you got to watch his website and get his email. All right, coming right back.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 1065. Call Sean now at 343-0106.
All right, rolling on FM Talk 1065 Midday Mobile. Hey, y'all. I'm Sean. Phone number is 343-0106, 343-0106. Also works for the text line. And a couple of things. I want to point some things out. So, and Todd said something that was almost exactly true, but not completely true about being the lowest tax. We're not. We're not the lowest tax. Because you have to, and somebody had said on the text line, a bunch of people, but this one, when are we going to be taxed enough? That's my thought on the gas tax. Right. So you have to look at the total of taxation, right? Because that's the problem. When you deal with sacred cows, one thing might affect one person more than another. What they're trying to do is get some balance, of course, would be the goal. Get some balance of overall taxation. So you got to look at it at... I think the most fair way to do it is by state overall. In other words, the total burden. And I understand because in doing that, you have income tax. And of course, in progressive systems, that doesn't mean liberal. That means it does mean liberal in a way. But it means obviously our rates increase as the income does. You look at varying states here and there because they have a bigger income tax, but is that, you know, based on a median income of what? And how many people in that state pay that versus another state? So believe me, there's a lot of gray to this. But I think as of last year, Alabama was 40... Hold on. Let me quick little thing. I think it was 43. 43 out of the 50 states. So as tax burden goes. Okay? So they included in this, I think it was, Wallet Hub did it. They said the total tax burden... And that was made up of property tax, individual income tax, and total sales and excise tax burden. Okay, so that's where those three columns led to the overall percentage of taxation by the state. New York was number one at 13.04%. Here in Alabama, we came in at 43 at 7.74%. So that's those three columns added together. And the lowest tax state in the union, Alaska, at 4.94%. So, and they were, get some of the ones below, the lower tax states in Alabama, South Dakota by just like a, it's not even worth talking. Let's just say we're tied with South Dakota. Then Oklahoma, 7.17%. New Hampshire at 7.07%. Florida at 6.64%. Think about that. Florida has big, big taxes on gasoline. People are like, well, I'll drive to Florida. Even after the gas tax increase is finished in 3 years, a total of 10 cents, we will still be less than Florida. But that's 6.64% total taxation because of no income tax, I'm sure. Tennessee, 6.47%, Delaware, 5.68%, and Alaska, like I said, at 4.94%. So that's the overall, those are the overall tax burden. So you can break down each column and kind of say, well, this state's really high in this, but they're low in that. This state is really high in two, but low in one. I tell you what, I'll tweet out this little graphic here, and you can check it out, and we can discuss it like we will right now by going to the phones. And let's check in with Matt and Daphne. Hey, Matt. Oh, there it is. I got to press the right button. Sorry, Matt. Go ahead.
Yeah, oh, yeah. I was just saying, first of all, that guy that was just on with you there.
Todd Stacey.
I don't agree with him at all.
Okay.
And, first of all, the people, we need taxation with representation. Mm-hmm. We don't need taxation without representation.
How was that? How did we get... Okay, hold on a second, Matt. How are we not having representation?
The people of the state vote for their state reps, and they vote for their state senators, and they vote for their governors. Yes, that is the representation. But they did not fill us in on that they were going to be voting for this. Hey, Ivy, no one else really, filled us in on this, that they would be voting for this. So we the people do not have to think so, really, when it comes down to this, that we're being taxed without being heard from.
Well, I mean, that happens a lot of times. You can argue in a representative system. Something comes up, and in this case, I'm with you because I think they kept a lot of things on the DL during 2018 that were coming for the 2019 session because they're all trying to get reelected, and then they mm-hmm. let it rip. I agree. But we still do have a representative system because the plan is, right, you don't like this, and you vote those people out and vote people in that will rescind it and change it. So, I mean, that's always the idea that if...
And what's interesting is that we have two people... Del Marsh and Chris Sprinkle want to see higher offices next year in the United States Senate and United States House. It'll be interesting to see if people that are in those districts, for Del Marsh, the entire state of Alabama, Chris Sprinkle for the first district, mm-hmm. will vote for those guys after they just voted for higher taxes.
You know, that was the interesting thing I thought more about, and because I'll tell you right now, I had talked to Representative Pringle, and he's like, I don't think I would, want to vote for this gas tax. And I talked to him several times while I was in Montgomery doing the show. And then he ended up going because, like, some people have argued, he didn't say this, but others have argued that, hey, it was going to happen anyways. We need to make sure we were in on it. But the Del Marsh side of it, I think, is very interesting because he is one of the biggest names that's circling around that may get in the Senate race. And you would think if you are Bradley Byrne right now, who, by the way, he joins us coming up next hour. But if you're Congressman Byrne right now, who's running for Senate, you would be already making the TV ads
right.
against Del Marsh, having them ready, like, go ahead and put those on the shelf. We'll break those right. out when he gets in. Yeah, right. so there must have either it's a tell to me that he's not getting in, or he feels like he's going to be backed by enough big money people to deal with that by spending. I don't know. I mean, I thought the same thing, Matt. I said how I thought maybe part of it to me was a tell that he wasn't going to get in, but now I, you know, it's the rumor mill Montgomery. They say he's still getting in, but you know, those people have been wrong before. So
yeah, that's right. I just wish we had earmarks for money to go where it's gonna, you know, where people say it's going to go in the government, not to their own pockets.
It does go. I'll say this, and it does, I appreciate it's going, but we do have earmarks. I disagree. We do have earmarks that send things to specific places, and the way it works is like they say this revenue that comes in through this excise, you know, or this other tax or this property tax or whatever, this directly goes, sometimes it's 100% to something, sometimes it's split 75%, 25%, or some ratio there. Like, they're directed, no matter what happens in the world around us, that money goes to that thing. You know, it's like it's already preordained. No matter what the circumstances are, the money goes to that. So I don't want more earmarks. I want less. And if you think, well, we can't do that, we don't have the people who can handle that in Montgomery, then maybe we need new people. David, in Mobile up next.
Hey, Sean. Gas tax, lottery, and Medicare expansion. Now we know why Governor Ivey didn't want to debate Walt Maddox when she was running for governor, because that would have been a very boring debate, because they pretty much would have agreed on everything.
Yeah, well, I know Medicaid expansion for sure. Maybe it would have been, you know, arguing level versus other level. But, yeah, and the lottery, didn't he want to go further? How did he, like, he said something when I talked to him. Remember, I had him on the show, and
it was an education lottery for scholarship.
That was it. That was it. It was a tweak. Yeah, it was a tweak. His was better because of some tweak, he said. I mean, you know the comedy of this. I know you've been watching this a long time. That even though it's a tell that McClendon's bill sends 50% to the general fund, because really the general fund needs the money, but he still has to put in 50% for schools so people will vote for it.
And yeah, that's crazy. I mean, you know, let's have an up or down vote on all Class 3 gaming, lottery, casinos, and sports betting, and let's see, are we going to be in or are we going to be out?
Great. I'm for that. I'm for that. All right, coming right back, grab some more calls and talk to you. And then coming up around 1:15, Congressman Bradley Byrne joins us to talk about this new VA facility opening.